Thanks, Bob. Hello, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Craig. Grateful to be here with you this evening, this morning, this afternoon, whatever time it is. And looking forward to discussing tradition four, which is one of my favorite traditions to kind of think a little different than most people do. Although I kind of do that with all of them, but you know, a lot of times we talk about autonomy in tradition four, and I would tell you that's the last thing we worry about in tradition four. I would say autonomy is the result of consultation. Autonomy is the result of practicing the first three principles. So autonomy is kind of born out of the process of having a common welfare, of having an informed group conscience, of sticking with our membership, including those who suffer from alcoholism, and being an A group without affiliation. Then, after we consult, we decide what that word autonomy means for us. And I'll get into that a little bit, page by page, and also just starting off like we did every week, reading the short form and the long form. Again, I'll say it over and over and over again. I think the long form's a lot more explicit, a lot more helpful, a lot more clear, and I definitely would make sure each of you, if you're not already informed of the long form, but when you're working with sponsees, if you don't already do this, just let them take a look at the long form. But the short form says each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or A as a whole. Again, I understand why everybody says autonomy, and I understand why everybody uses the standard description of what tradition four means with respects to harming other groups or as a whole. But when we jump over to, by the way, you can find the short form in the big book, page 562. But when we jump to the long form in the big book and we go to tradition four, with respects to its own affairs, each A group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. So we see how all of these traditions are working together, and I'll get back to that. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. Rarely does that happen. And it's so funny because if we pause and we talk a little bit about the things we don't like to talk about, like the conference charter, the unity of A as a whole versus just what we want as individuals within a group. All of these things fall right in a row. This is not anything magical or radical or, oh my God, I never heard that before. I mean, this is really pretty simple. And I'll keep going and I'll get back to each of those. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect A as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. So this tradition really, and by the way, don't you get a lot more out of that than the short form? I mean, there's a lot more there to discuss. Even if you don't understand it, there's more direction there to kind of start a discussion, to say, I don't know, to have some humility, to ask others. When we look at concept one, which I know we're not talking about the concepts per se during this workshop, but when we look at concept one, the way we practice concept one in the service structure is to be an AA group and elected GSR. The best way to consult with other groups is to have a general service representative, because you get to consult with each other every third Tuesday of the month, or every second Wednesday of the month, or every first Friday or Saturday of the month, whatever the district meeting is, my point. And that's the gathering of all the GSRs. That's the gathering of the neighboring groups. That's what allows communication to be fostered. Sure, absolutely. I know I'm in a room full of alcoholics. If we don't have a GSR, we can still contact another group. I get it. But there's an idea of participating within the structure and having some sort of arena where we can have these conversations. So now breaking down each line, excuse me, with respects to its own affairs. So with respects to the group's own affairs, Are we a speaker meeting? Do we use a literature? And that's a funny one, because I know some people say all the time to reference conference approved literature only. Careful with that phrase. I can live you, we won't do it tonight because there's not enough time. There is a long list of very useful, factual, and helpful literature that is AA literature, but it's not conference approved literature. So conference approved literature is important in my experience. It's necessary. It has gone through the conference. It has gone through a process of committee work and publishing and the office and the board and the delegates and yada yada. Yes. But I'm actually a real big fan of local literature, because while you're sitting in there in Seattle dealing with a whole bunch of insurance issues at the intergroup that the rest of the world has never dealt with before, you can create a nice little story in your newsletter that can help share experience to San Francisco or New York City or Dallas, Texas. Or if you have a deaf intergroup down in South Texas where no one else has one and you have some experience to share about how that deaf intergroup operates and how they work within the community, you can share so much with us. We don't have time for that to go to the conference, you know? So just throwing that out there. I took a little side route there. But with respect to its own affairs, so is the group a speaker meeting, you know, are we literature-based? Do we like to have concepts on the third Thursday, but then we do traditions on the second and then steps on the other three? Whatever it might be, the AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. So it's really just reinforcing tradition one and two. It's reinforcing the common welfare. It's reinforcing the informed group conscience. Because when we have a discussion, a thorough discussion, and all voices are heard and all questions are asked, and we come to a decision, and we create guidelines or bylaws or just an informed group conscience, that's our authority. The authority is not Craig, it's not Bob, it's not Jen, it's not Brooke, it's the informed group conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. What do you think the percentage rate of groups in your district or your area, wherever you live, what do you think the percentage rate of those groups consulting with other groups is? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's zero. I mean, there you have some GSRs at the district, but it's probably pretty low. It's probably pretty, pretty low. And that in itself, before we go redesigning the service structure, we should start there. Because think of how much information is already being missed by us not having general service representatives, by us not consulting with other groups. It's also the very thing we practice in the steps, right? Like we talk all the time with our sponsors after we go through inventory or we make amends or we look at our A-step list or our list of defects, whatever it is, that we want to be a preventer rather than a fixer. We don't want to go out and make the same mistakes that other people have. We want to learn from the people coming down the mountain as we're going up. But then we forget all of that stuff we learned when it comes to the group. Let's just do this. Oh, who cares how you open up a bank account? We'll just wing it. Oh, who cares about anonymity? We'll figure it out. But we already did that 80 years ago. And I'm just going to give you some perspective that makes it a little bigger than just what one person thinks. If you were to take $18 million budget, $17 million budget, $16 million, $15 million, $14, $13, $12, that's just the last 10 years of budgets for the, you know, within the General Service Conference, the General Service Board, General Service Office, all of the publishing work, all of the delegate work, all of the discussions, all of the countless hours, all of that stuff is a waste if we just go do what we want to do and go wing it. All the books that have already been published, all of the things we're reading, a waste. Now, I'm not saying you have to just bow down to whatever's in black and white. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm just saying, if we're not considering our experience that we've already been through, we're not considering the blood we've already spilled, the sweat we've already poured, I not only think it's disrespectful, but I also don't think it's practical. It's also why we should preserve our minutes within our group. One of the most underrated group roles is the archivist. If you don't want to make the same mistakes, document the things you've done. And when I worked at the General Service Office, I used to love the archives department because they would remind me all the time, in order for AA to grow, we have to document the good, the bad, and the ugly. We don't just talk about how many positions were elected and how great we did and how many hundreds of people were at our group anniversary. We also talk about we could barely keep the doors open for 7 months in the beginning. We didn't even understand what the seventh tradition was and where to send it. We didn't even know what anonymity meant, whether that meant saying hi to someone at the church or that meant TV or whatever, like whatever it is, like not documenting that stuff, we're missing out. So I would suggest for anyone on this call, within your groups, whatever, when you're going to make a decision that is going to affect anything other than yourselves, which by the way is a lot, you should consult. Please don't take it the wrong way. I'm not saying everything you do, you need approval from people. But I'll give you a very practical example. One of the silliest things we say in AA all the time is resentment in a coffee pot. But then that same person is quoting the big book later talking about how resentment kills. But yet, resentment in a coffee pot, right? But it happens. When you start a new group, this is something I've lived. I've done several times. We go visit the district that we're starting the group in. And some people are going to think this is ridiculous, but this is my experience. We go visit the group because we know that, we go visit the district because we know within that district, there's groups that have been there for 70 years. Yes, it's a free country. Yes, it's a capitalist society. Yeah, we can start a meeting in the same building at the same time if we want. But why would we want to do that? So we consult with those groups in that district and we say, hey, where do you think there's a need? Because that's very hard for us. We got the best meeting in the world. We got the best format. We know everything. Our group's the best. That kind of attitude is not going to ask for help, is not going to consult. And that group is, in my opinion, maybe not the healthiest group. But asking the groups, hey, what time slot do you, oh, you know what? There's nobody really meeting, you know, in the evening on Thursday. Why don't you try that? And that's just an example. If you're in a large city, there's going to be meetings all the time. But I'm just giving you a perspective of something I did when I had moved to Connecticut and started a group. We had consulted with the district and we didn't want to step on toes. It happens all the time and we don't realize it. Groups that have been there forever, we just set up shop because we didn't communicate. You know, when we're going to do something with respects to public information, when we're going to do something with respects to cooperation professional community or working within the community or doing any sort of open AA group, consultation, again, isn't just about permission. It's about shared experience. There's a thing called country-to-country sponsorship, where countries are so new. Again, a lot of us come back from a resort in the Dominican Republic and we think AA is everywhere. First of all, you didn't even really go into the Dominican Republic. You just went into some tiny little resort where they have water slides that go into the, you know, the bay with a bunch of sharks or whatever. But you're not actually in the community. AA is not everywhere, folks. I'm telling you, it's not. There's plenty of drunk suffering. Another day, another story, another tradition. But the point I'm trying to make is, how do we consult? The same way we learned in the step work. How do we ask for help? How do we admit we don't know? How do we ask for guidance and strength of how to do something? You know, how do you facilitate your format? What do you guys do with the concepts and bring that to your group? In other words, any question you come up, why not have that dialogue? And I guess the point I'm trying to slam home is you don't need an account. You don't need a scheduling book and a pen to make this happen. You just need to send the GSR to the district. And then before you know it, your district meeting will now become about communication between the GSRs instead of countless hours of monotony and what kind of tea we're going to have and blah, blah, blah. Now we get a little deeper. When our plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups, those groups ought to be consulted. So we want to be careful not to use the AA name in any negative light, of course. We want to make sure If we've caused harm, we've made amends. You know, all the what I would think is standard logical things to do. But then when we get on a little bit of a larger level, no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect A as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Imagine if we just started there with anonymity. I mean, I don't know how to describe. It's such a free-flowing society. We're an organization that claps for the person who doesn't have a report and boos the person that knows what they're talking about. It's a very interesting thing we have here in AA sometimes, but it happens a lot. But what do we do when somebody, we feel like it's an authority, right? But we forget, we're not consulting the General Service Board because we've given each of those individuals the power to tell us what to do and how to do it. We've just consulted them more as guardians of the repository of our shared experience, as guardians of the collective conscience of the General Service Conference of that year and previous years. We've consulted those that kind of have the information at hand, but ultimately it's still all of our information. But before we're going to use the AA name in an interesting way or an inappropriate way, why not consult? And I'm not saying every group should call the General Service Board. I do think there's a lot to break down with that tradition. When these traditions were written, it was a little bit smaller, obviously, than we are now. So we now have representatives where we can kind of talk through that and work through that. But I think the point that slammed home through this entire long form is humility and consultation. You don't really hear much autonomy there at all, except with respects to its own affairs. Now, personality is good in AA. I don't want a bunch of clones. I don't want a bunch of boring people. And the tradition, if you're one of those people that need permission, the tradition gives you permission. It says principles before personalities, not instead of personalities. So, of course, we have personality in AA. We want to have personality, you know? Whether you have the Danbury Soul Group or you have the Mia Speranza and Danbury My Hope Group or you have the On the Top of the Mountain Group or you had the Laid Back, you know, by the Beach Group, whatever it is, it's a fair cross-section of what that neighborhood is. So it's good to have some personality. The first AA meeting I ever went to was a Nubian meeting. I walked up on a Nubian meeting. And it had a lot of flavor. And you, most people in this room might not even know what that means. Another example of personality relative to the, you know, the neighborhood you're in or the society you're in or the community you're in. You want it to have that magnet to the community. What I'm trying to say is if you're in a Spanish community and you have an English meeting, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's going to be very hard to bring the message when there's a language barrier. Well, it's kind of the same thing culturally. Like you want to have a cross section of the community. So you're a magnet for those that you're serving, right? I'm going to go to comes of age now. So when you look at page 103, you know, first paragraph right after it mentions the tradition. It says, neither could anybody else at A headquarters. The group said to us, we like what you are doing. Sometimes your suggestion and advice are good, but whether to take you or leave you alone is going to be our decision. So it's the check and balance of consultation, but then you still have the autonomy to do what you need to. What I say all the time too with this idea, because what do we do all the time with tradition four is we quote, the group has the right to be wrong, right? So again, everybody knows, at least if you know me a little bit, I'm always talking about, you know, service and recovery are not separate, right? So when we're talking with our sponsor as individuals and we're going over our 10th step or a 4th step if we're newer or both, if we've been around, whatever the case, we don't go do whatever we want and come back to our sponsor and be like, I have the right to be wrong. I punched a dude in the face or, you know, that guy owed me money, so I just took his money, but I have the right to be wrong. That's not what we mean by the right to be wrong. What we mean is, based on trying these principles, based on trying to have a conscious contact with God, based on trying to live spiritually, based on trying to do the right thing, I went out there and I did the best I could, but I was wrong. And I had the right to be wrong just as well as I have the right to clean that up. And that's the spirit that we're trying to create with the group. We're not trying to create this idea of anarchy, oh, you can do whatever you want, right? Because autonomy without consultation is anarchy, in my experience. And I think it's important to have that communication. Brooke, you got something?
I do. Somebody asked if you could please give an example of an action taken that we might want to confer with the General Service Board.
Great question. And as I alluded to earlier, I don't think there's many in 2024 that you would necessarily directly go with the board. I think you would start by having that consultation within your district, and you'd be talking with your DCM, and the delegate would get involved if they need to. And then, you know, communication would happen back and forth. Maybe the office would be called, maybe the board would be called. But as far as something that might take place, how about if you had a really good relationship inside a correctional facility and they wanted to have a convention? And they wanted to have a convention inside of this correctional facility. How would we do that? Great intentions. People are excited. You know, I don't like that word. People are excited. That's in quotes. The volunteer coordinator really likes working with you, all that stuff. Everything seems like the road is paved with good intentions. There doesn't seem like anything's dangerous there, but we should still communicate and consult so that we can find out the best way to facilitate this. A convention that's inside a correctional facility, although there's been two of them, is a little bit different than a regular convention, because you have people that are in custody, you have rules and regulations, you have the facilities, you know, you have state law, like there's so much to deal with. So we need to slow it down, make sure we know our traditions, get informed. I would fall back in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I would do flips. I would give more time than I'm already doing. I would give you my right arm. If we, as individual groups, districts, areas, even the office itself, even the board itself, paused, and if we didn't have experience already, took the time to just simply consult. Because even when you're in the know, why wouldn't you consult? One of my service mentors, I bug him all the time with questions. And I would consider myself, if I'm allowed to say this, above average with respects to being informed on AA history, with respects to knowing traditions and concepts and understanding the manual and the literature we have. But I bugged the living, you know what, we're being recorded, so I'll keep it nice, out of that individual and others, because I want to know their perspective. I want to know what they did. I asked them, even when I feel confident and bold, I asked them, hey, what would you do here? What's your experience with this? And another discipline where service meets recovery, sponsorship is not about lecturing. It's about sharing experience. So if we don't have experience, then we ask someone else for experience. And when we do have experience, we connect on that experience. So that's what happens with the groups when we consult. So getting back to that question that the person asked, which is a great question, I mean, I would consult on everything we don't know. But that's the funny thing, right? The group would have to admit it doesn't know first. And I'm going to tell you right now, we say it jokingly, but we talk about the seven step and we say, oh, if you want to know if you have defects of character, get involved in service. Well, I'm going to tell you what, the more you're involved in AA, the longer you know the information that's in front of you, the harder it is to not be judgmental. Because you're saying to yourself, are you kidding me right now? And it's not really right to do that, because you've made the same mistakes they have. So you're there to share experience and connect and help. But I need to constantly be humbled because I'm always disappointed. But it's not your fault. We could have 100,000 people in the international convention. I'd still be disappointed. I think it's unacceptable. I remember being at a local clubhouse. I won't say what year it was because I don't want to throw any bad juju out there. But we were in this particular city, 8 blocks from where the international convention was. And no one in that group knew that the international convention was happening. That's scary. That to me is a breakdown in communication. That to me is people not consulting. I really hope it's a practice we start to do because then it matters. We want to hear from each other. We want to know, hey, how are you doing so well with attendance? Hey, how does it work for you when you negotiate the contract with the church? Hey, did you sign a lease since COVID because you realized that you got screwed? And if something else happens again, you want to protect AA's money? You know, hey, what do you guys do with insurance? It gets real slippery up here in Alaska in the winter. People fall and break their leg. Like, all of those things. Like, why aren't we consulting regularly, more often? And it gives us more reason to connect, which also gives us what? More unity, more purpose. Things are more interesting. It's hard to foster that, though, when we only care about ourselves. Is there any other questions, Brooke? Thank you. So I'm going to turn to page 104. I'm not going to read the whole story to you going from 103 to 104, but if you have Comes of Age and you read it and you know about the super promoter and you know what he was doing and you know what idea he was selling the townspeople on. And it's so funny because Rule 62, there's a lot of things, and I want to do another workshop one day where we talk about all these one-liners that aren't even what they're supposed to be, right? Like the one I love the most is like the 13th step. Like the 13th step actually has nothing to do with sex. It's what they used to call clubhouses back in the day because they weren't AA. They're an extension of the 12 step. So they called that the 13th step. So there's lots of things, but this whole Rule 62 thing is often misquoted. And don't take my word for it. Consult AA Comes of Age. It's right here in front of you on page 104. But I'm gonna read real quick. Here was the promoter. He actually sold the townspeople on his idea. He naturally was to become the general manager. His blueprint involved 3 separate corporations. This is a guy who wanted to make AA big. He wanted to have all different, kind of like Bill, you know, have all different things like hospitals and you know, all these things inside one building. One for the club, one for the clinic, and one for the loan department. Can you imagine a loan department in Alcoholics Anonymous? That would be interesting. Altogether, he wrote 61 rules, regulations, and bylaws to make these corporations do their good work. With the exception of a few diehards, his fellow AAs were sold. He was the man of the hour. He applied to New York for a super charter. Hearing of this, some of the dissenters wrote us, "We had to tell them that each AA group could manage its own affairs as it liked, provided it did not harm surrounding groups." Continuing, "But as strongly as we dared, we did point out that even less grandiose schemes of a like character had failed everywhere before, as it had a right to. This very autonomous group ignored our warnings." Now, if you're a AA service junkie like me, there's a razor's edge you've already come across, or you will come across, when you're visiting groups that aren't doing the right thing. And I'm not saying I'm a... can't think of the word. I'm in charge of that, but I'm not an idiot. I can see when a group's not doing the right thing. You get on this razor's edge of, man, I really hope the group dies. You know, I know I shouldn't dare say that. That's such a mean thing to say. I'm just sharing openly and honestly. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just sharing with you. Well, I hope the group dies because this is hurting too many people. But then you're like, no, I mean, I want the group to survive and learn the traditions. And the funny thing is, no matter how many times you bang your head, and I'm talking more from the perspective of a DCM or a GSR or delegate, something of that sort, you're going to see that groups that don't adhere to these principles do die. But much like the alcoholic, that doesn't necessarily mean literal, because there's a lot of dead alcoholics walking around. And sometimes the AA group dies, but it's still there. So outside of what this book says, although I love the books, I love the literature, I don't like silly phrases like 90% of the, or 10% of the people do 90% of the work. I don't like that phrase. It really annoys me. I'm looking more for like 25%. But we need to do a little better together in order to get there. Maybe you can guess what happened. After many a rumbling, the crash came. It was like a boiler explosion in a clapboard factory. The thump of colliding egos could be heard and felt for miles. After all the poetic hearsays. But of course, things quieted down. And after a long interval, we heard from the promoter. This is what he wrote. You told us that outside enterprises can be fine and very helpful. But you also said they could not be mixed with AA. I figured that they could be and should be. Well, you folks at headquarters were right, and I was wrong. Continuing, here's the important part. With this letter, the promoter sent us a card, which he had already mailed to every group in the United States, back when you could do that. It was folded like a golf scorecard, and on the outside was printed, Group So-and-So, Place So-and-So, Rule Number 62. Don't take yourself too damn seriously. A lot of the times, I'll see people quote it to a really inspired newcomer of service. Somebody will say, Rule 62, don't take yourself so seriously, which is kind of insulting. We should be encouraging and supporting that. And if you don't like my word for it, just look at working with others in the big book. We don't want to dampen any of that. We want to encourage that. But the moral of the story here, from my perspective and my experience, is Rule 62 is about admitting how wrong you are. Understanding that you are not in charge and running the show and not using consultation can be a very big problem. Rule 62 is not because you're really focused and you think we should have a business meeting. Rule 62 is not because you feel really firm about AA traditions and concepts. That's not what Rule 62 is for. Just something to consider. Tradition for an AA group and exercise its right to be wrong. And you guys can come up with your own experience and perspective, and each group can as well. But if we've been here quite some time and we're continually trying to carry the message and carry it effectively, what's the bar we want to set? And I say this all the time, like when we're talking about the discussion comes up with listing groups, whether we're talking about a local district, an intergroup, or even a larger entity. Listing groups is a very, very important thing in my experience with respects to the integrity of our message and the longevity of AA. Again, I'm just sharing my experience. But letting a group know that if you don't follow the protocol, that we can't list your group is not an unspiritual bad thing. If we want you to be based within the traditions, if we want you to help us understand that you're an AA group and we know that you're an AA group, if we want to make sure that you're going to be here for a while before we burn a lot of AA money and resources, that's not a bad thing. And that entity is certainly not telling the groups what to do. They're telling you what we should do. And if you don't follow these guidelines, then we're not going to list you is a very fair prospect. A, because the groups through representation are the ones who've elected those people or empowered those people or send money to those people. B, there's an informed group conscience that comes up with that guideline. And C, the common welfare is bigger than one individual group. Group names. Group names are another interesting one. That one we could talk about till the cows come home. I learned a lot of stuff in my experience with respects to group names. For example, one name might mean something in New York City and it means something totally different in Manitoba, Canada. So certain things may seem like affiliation, may not. But I think we get the gist. And this has everything to do with consultation, is my point. There's a thing called fellowship connection. And your DCM and your delegate gets an alert when a new group is formed. And hopefully, if the DCM and the delegate are doing their job, they send a letter or they reach out their hand and welcome that new group to the structure. Start to show them why it's important to communicate and have consultation. And I think we treat the group the same way we do a newcomer. Just because someone came to AA and said the word drugs doesn't mean we're chasing them out of here and trying to kick them out. But we start to help them understand what AA's purpose is, what it means to be alcoholic, take them through the first 43 pages. And this seems radical because people can't wrap it around their heads. But why can't we do that with groups? And there's only one excuse why we can't. Because we form too many groups, too many resentments in coffee pots. It seems like there's not enough time. But even then, and this is my own experience as a DCM, as a delegate, as a chair of a regional assembly, there's plenty of time if you make the time. You're a DCM, you're in office for 2 years. Whether you're fortunate enough to be in an area where you're only responsible for 15 to 20 groups, or even if you're in an area where it's overpopulated and you're responsible for 80 groups, there is still plenty of time to talk, foster, and help walk that group through the process of what it means to be an AA group, including what group names are, including what AA traditions are, including what shared experience is. We don't need to tell groups what to do. We can give them all the information and then let them make an informed decision. Most decisions, in my experience, are not really belligerents. They're misinformed decisions. Most people aren't like, screw the service structure, I'm going to do this. Sure, those words have been said before, but it's more about being misinformed. There's a lot of people walking around that don't even understand what AA is and what it isn't. And if you look at the DCMs in your district, might even be you, and you might be a good one too. How many times have they took the time to sit down and help walk that new group into the service structure? Help explain to them why it's important to have a general service representative. What the seven tradition means. What it means to have relationships with the church that you're meeting in, or the VFW that you're meeting in, cooperating but not affiliating, all of those things, if they're not made important, if they're not made to be serious, then we can't complain why people don't take them serious. Tradition 4, in my experience, is also about vision, and it talks about that here. It talks about having the vision. It says at the bottom of 104, even the chief architect standing in the ruins of his dream could laugh at himself. And that is the acme of humility. There's no shot at vision without humbleness, being humble. I can't really have vision if I'm not humbled. When you look at page 105, I have a question that I ask all my sponsees and I ask myself, and I have it written down the side of page 105. And this is the question. Do I see needed change and speak up while trusting the group conscience? And I reference concept 9 when I'm doing one-on-one sponsorship there. Like concept 9, if you don't know, is about, good leadership. I prefer the word great, about great leadership. But when we see needed change, do we speak up, but then trust the conscience? And that happens all the time because we'll go into a group setting, and I'm kind of talking about a lot of the previous traditions here too, but we'll go into the group setting and we'll have 20 minutes of conversation, but not any information, just opinion. And then we'll have a 10-9 vote, and then we'll expect people to trust the voice of AA. And that, to me as an individual, doesn't make any sense. You have to earn my trust. And I mean, I have to earn your trust also. But there needs to be information, accurate information. But when we see needed change, do we speak up? That phrase, we all know the set-aside prayer, lay aside everything we think we know for an open mind, new experience. It's so funny. The minute we say that phrase, the very next minute, we're already telling you what we know. And not only does that happen as individuals, that happens as a group. If I could get a 30% better ratio of I don't know with groups, I would be happy. Not that it's up to me. I'm just saying, like, because I really love working with newcomers. And when I say newcomers, it could even mean people that have been here for a long time. I see you, Brooke. Been here for a long time, but are new to service. Think about it too. If you've sponsored, if you live in a community where there's a lot of arguing about anonymity and singleness of purpose, but then you get someone new that's never heard any of it, and all they do is read the book, and they just follow the book because it's common sense. Oh, if I'm in AA, I'm going to do what AA says, you know? Like, it's so common for newer people to have that. I just think it's so important for us, like it says here, if we were able to improve on our methods, then in all probability, we would adopt what they discovered for general use everywhere. It's speaking with respect to AA principles. If we could have more conversations about the principles, if we could have more information about the principles, then each group could operate within those principles as they please. Hence the autonomy, which is born after consultation. What do you got, Brooke?
Somebody asked me where they could find the recording. I answered back that they can find it on the District 6 website. But the question to you was, how do districts get formed? Can we change the district we are in?
Okay, so that's two questions. So I'm going to start with the second question. Can we change the district we're in? Was that what it said? So districts are comprised of the groups within a certain boundary, typically. In 2024, because you have virtual districts and linguistic districts, it can get a little complicated, but just using the general sense of a district, it's comprised of the groups within a geographic boundary. So if you fall within that geographic boundary and you fall within that district, you can certainly bring discussion up. But just understand everyone else has a say as well. It's really also up to you. Not that I'm trying to tell people that live on one side of the state to drive 40 miles to be a part of a district because they don't like this district. But also at the end of the day, in my experience, you know, a group is a member of a district that it would like to participate in. But a district can still trump that if all the neighboring groups have specific guidelines. So it gets very complicated. But districts were formed years and years ago, and, you know, before they had areas. And I mean, what was the first question again? I'm sorry.
It was, how do districts get formed?
Yeah. So in 2024, districts, if you were going to form new districts, they would be formed, in my experience, out of either creating a new district or redistricting, which would mean if you already had a set of, I don't know, let's say 50 districts within the area and you wanted to redistrict to either make it less districts or to make it more districts, that's how they're formed. And essentially the GSRs would elect the DCMs and they would be responsible to that geographic boundary with which they serve. That's where they're formed. That's how they're formed. But it all comes out of the informed group conscience. It all comes out of consultation. It all comes out of one district talking to another, the same way a group would talk to another. Any other questions?
Yes. It says, can we have two districts in the same area?
So I'm guessing by that word area, they don't mean area as a service structure. So Oh, these are great questions, but they're also very complicated. So let's just say, so the answer is yes. So let's say you took the city of Miami, which I think is actually District 10, but let's just forget I said that. Let's just call it Miami because it's a city and this is a Florida district, although it's nowhere near Miami. But anyway, if you're in the city of Miami, I mean, you could have three districts. I mean, you could have four. There's some cities that have, seven, eight districts. And then there's some towns with an area. And by area, I mean the general service structure area, the general service assembly. You could have seven, eight, nine towns that only make up one district. So lots of land, but not a lot of population. These questions are very helpful because I'm realizing that there's still a lot of folks that are newer to service here, which is great. But when you look at the general service structure, you have what's known as an upside down triangle. And at the top of that triangle, you have the AA groups. Underneath the AA groups is the district. So the groups in the district communicate through the GSR and the DCM, through representation. It's the groups communicating with the district, but the elected representation is a district committee member for the district and a general service representative for the groups. And then the districts communicate with the area through the area committee and the area assembly. And there's various representations there, but the quote-unquote leader is the area delegate. And then the area communicates with the General Service Conference, which is where the General Service Board and all the 93 delegates, we have 93 areas in the US and Canada. We have over 3,500 districts and we have over 73,000 groups. So within the confines of the US and Canada structure, we have that upside down triangle, groups at the top, districts below it, areas below it, and then General Service Conference. And then below the General Service Conference, we have General Service Board and its affiliates, which is Alcoholics Anonymous World Services and the AA Grapevine. And that triangle and those communications and those up and down consultations are what help Alcoholics Anonymous make the best possible decisions. Any other questions? I love this line. I'm gonna do a lot of reading here in the next 4 minutes, 3 minutes, I guess. Bob's all over me. So, it talks in here that A's come a frozen set of dogmatic principles that could not be changed, even when obviously wrong. Healthy trial and error always have the day and place in AA. Of course, any descendant group is urged, though never commanded, not to make any other affiliation. Obviously, we could not very well have Catholic groups, Protestant groups, Republican groups, Democratic groups, or communist groups, nor should an AA group ally itself with any particular brand of medical or psychiatric treatment. We can cooperate with anyone, but the name Alcoholics Anonymous must be reserved for us only. And then this is a real important paragraph I want to get in there. And you'll see this over and over, actually. We have two authorities which are far more effective than what? The human authority. So there's no human authority in AA. One is benign and the other is malignant. There is God our Father who is very simply says, I am waiting for you to do my will. The other authority is named John Barleycorn, and he says, you had better do God's will or I will kill you. And sometimes he does kill. And this is a very reason why consultation is important. Because if you don't know who John Barleycorn is, you just went off the rail during that paragraph. You're like, what the heck is he talking about? John, I thought they said no human power. Why is John Barleycorn getting ready to kill everyone? And if you don't know, just like I didn't know, John Barleycorn is alcohol. So the two authorities are spirituality or God and alcohol. Those are the only ones that could really put each of us individually or each of our groups into shape. I got 1 minute here, and I just want to say these traditions are, and I got to read this real quick, Bob, bear with me. Because do I want these principles? I got to ask myself, do I want these? We begin to obey them because we think they are right for us. We obey these principles because we think they are good principles, even though we still resist. Then comes the final level of obedience, the best of all. We obey AA steps and traditions because we really want them for ourselves. We see the benefit. We understand the benefit. We see its usefulness, not only for us individually, but for the longevity of our society. And I'll end with this. It's no longer about good or evil. We conform because we genuinely want to conform. Such is our process of growth in unity and in function. It's all about effective communication, much like the 10 steps says. Thanks for another week, another opportunity to be useful. I appreciate it.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.